The views expressed on tonight's Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio show are the opinions of neither this station nor its sponsors. In fact, they're not necessarily the opinions of Radio Liberty or of Freedom 21 Santa Cruz. The views expressed by the host are those of the host. Also, the opinions expressed by callers and guests are theirs. Whether you agree or disagree, please join in. To participate, you can call during caller segments at 888-24-LIBERTY. That's 888-245-4237. Or you can go to our online audience participation center at www.freedom21santacruz.net/radio. That's freedom21santacruz.net/radio. Now let's start advancing freedom.
Well, good evening and welcome to this week's edition of the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio show. I'm Michael Shaw, and I'm here with what I hope to be soon to arrive, my co-host, Roy Avila. And we're going to have an interesting show tonight on two aspects that are so critical to the future prospects of the United States. Two elements that combine together to bring about the fast-approaching Wildlands Project implementation here in the United States. Our first hour, we're going to talk about the Endangered Species Act. That's really the core ingredient for bringing to us the grab of rural lands across the United States. And in the second hour, we're going to talk about conservation easements, which is the clever tool used to implement Wildlands Project, particularly when it combines with the Endangered Species Act. Our first hour, our guest is going to be Margaret Byfield. Margaret is the executive director of Stewards of the Range, which is a national property rights organization that is behind the Hage versus the United States takings case. And for those who are regular listeners, you probably heard and have heard our replays of the two-hour interview we did with Wayne Hage on his landmark case that he is so far victorious in against the Department of Interior and the federal government for the takings of his water on his ranch in Nevada. Stewards of the Range is headquartered in Idaho with an office in Texas. Margaret is also vice president of Liberty Matters, which publishes the weekly Liberty Matters news service. And if you're not getting that, I heartily recommend that you do. You can go to check out Liberty Matters by Googling just that name, Liberty Matters, and you'll come up with it easily, and you can sign up for their weekly news service, which can be of great assistance to those who are focused and interested on these issues. And gee whiz, there's no reason why any and all Americans should not be. Margaret, are you with us yet? No, we don't have Margaret, so we're going to be with her shortly. But the last week, the Congress, the House, passed a reauthorization of the 32-year-old Endangered Species Act. The ESA, as it is often called, has destroyed many lives, and its record of success for species protection is dismal indeed. Resources have been put out of reach of the marketplace, driving up the cost of living for all of us. The federal government's reauthorization will create permanent damage to the American experience. And we're going to hear from Margaret Byfield and from some other experts in this area later in the hour regarding the ongoing political maneuverings regarding Congressman Pombo's reauthorization bill. We're going to hear later in the hour from Julie Smithson and from Catherine Lehman regarding the nature and effect of the Endangered Species Act on America and Americans. The Endangered Species Act, of course, the big problem there is how it has put plants and animals above the interests of human beings and their property. And, of course, with the recent decision by the Supreme Court in Kelo, we now all know that private property is under assault from all branches of the federal government. And, of course, this has been ongoing for a long time, especially in rural areas of America, and nothing has been more responsible for that onslaught than the Endangered Species Act. So its reauthorization for another 30 years is really critical. So welcome to tonight's Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio show. And while we continue to work through some issues to bring Margaret on the line, we'll take a call from Julie Smithson, who is going to join us tonight from Ohio. Julie is the director of PropertyRightsResearch.org. If you check that out on the web, you'll find incredible volumes of information on property right issues and the assault upon property rights. And she's been very watchful of the endangered species process here with the new reauthorization bill. Julie, are you with us this evening?
Yes, I am. Good evening, Michael.
Well, it's good to hear from you. If you've, I think you've been on the line, so you heard the first few minutes of the show. We don't have Margaret on the line yet, but let's get the show started. And in a summary, what is it that the average American needs to know about the Endangered Species Act?
I think the most important thing that the average American should be aware of is that we're at this act that has been on the books for 32 years, as with a lot of other federal legislation, makes extensive use of language deception. And by that I mean that a word like restoration or protection or even the word endangered or threatened maybe doesn't mean to the reader what the federal agency intends for it to be. So the very definition of an endangered species is a species that's endangered throughout all or part of its historic range. Now this means that, for example, the spotted owl in the Pacific Northwest, it may not be endangered anywhere within its entire historic range except one small area.
Well, it'd be like the Kit Fox in downtown Los Angeles.
Exactly. Or in my neighborhood here in West Central Ohio, it could be the Indiana bat. There's many species that have been used. I call them poster species because they seem to have the ability to wipe out an area of either development or resource extraction or resource providing very effectively just by the fact that they might have a problem with their habitat. Never mind that human beings have habitat and needs too.
Well, the Endangered Species Act has a strong record of putting plants and animals, is what I always say, putting plants and animals ahead of human beings when it comes to land resource issues. We now have Margaret, I think, on another line. Margaret, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Well, sorry we didn't get that worked out right at the beginning of the show. For our listeners, this is Margaret Byfield, and as we've explained, she's the executive director of Stewards of the Range and vice president of Liberty Matters. And Margaret, you've been right there in the midst of what's been going on in Washington, D.C., working with people there and elsewhere around the country. And Julie's given us a brief introduction to what the Endangered Species Act is. And Julie, I think your characterization of how the Endangered Species Act and so many acts like it use words in ways that are not common to ordinary usage of people and even congressmen who are voting for this. And so that ends up meaning that we end up with all kinds of strange applications of how these laws become effected. And we had a show 3 weeks ago here on logical positivism, using the meaning of words and destroying the meaning of words so that the words can end up meaning anything. And the Endangered Species Act has certainly been a good example of how that's been the case. Tell us what's going on with the reauthorization of the ESA.
Well, the original draft version was changed, and there were some adjustments made to it, and it is now has passed the House of Representatives, although it was a close vote. It was 223-196 with 11 congressmen not voting, and that's encouraging, the fact that it was a close vote. But now it goes to the Senate, and it can actually be rewritten or amended again before the Senate does a vote on it. They are actually, right now, I saw in the news today, they said it could be up to a year before it actually makes it to the Senate. But this is nebulous because it could be a week. It could be tomorrow. No one really knows. And the general public doesn't have access to the wording of the bill. a lot of the legislators don't. They are asked to vote on something that they know very little about, and it's almost impossible to expect your elected official to know the wording of all the things that they are required to vote on. That's where the citizen that's informed and educated and empowered can be a great asset to their elected official as well as to their community by learning what these bills are all about and the far-reaching effects they can have from Washington, D.C. to the furthest reaches of America.
Well, and certainly this bill has far-reaching effects. Now, the bill went through Congress lickety-split, did it not?
Yes, it did.
It was filed and passed, marked up and then passed through the House within 2 weeks. And the bill was not, nobody saw the bill until about, well, less than 24 hours before it was actually filed, and that was under lock and key, where they were given a copy to view it but couldn't take a copy with them. So, but I think, if you don't mind, I'd like to back up and give a little bit of political history on how this all came about, because it was almost a year ago, back in November, that Congressman Pombo informed a group of property rights advocates and resource users in Washington, D.C. at a meeting, which our attorney, Fred Grant, was in the meeting. And he explained that he was going to be pushing a reauthorization bill with the ESA, but that he could only accomplish small fixes. And so what the property rights advocates, landowners, were going to have to be quiet in this debate, because he really thought that we could foil the small fixes, which is all he thought he could get accomplished. Well, you know, property rights advocates and landowners don't take kindly to being told that our issues aren't important and our property rights aren't important. And so that really galvanized, I think, a lot of people in the movement. And by about March or April, a number of us had started coordinating, different organizations had started coordinating across the country, and were able to generate, get word out to the grassroots, which was critically important to the debate. And a couple of the groups that we were working with in Washington, D.C., the American Policy Center and the National Center for Public Policy Research, did a great job at getting some very high-powered organizations in D.C. to sign on to a letter that actually, you know, explained that we don't want the ESA reauthorized. And that put a lot of political pressure, I think, on this whole debate. And I think what's really key for people to understand is that it was the property rights issues which are driving this debate. Pombo was set to file a bill, which I think everybody's pretty familiar with, which included invasive species and, of course, had no mention of property rights in it.
Let's just pause for a second and make sure the audience understands what you mean when you say invasive species. The Endangered Species Act was to include a section on invasive species.
Yes.
Explain that for a minute.
Well, that meant that species that might impact the critical habitat of another species. Well, let me give you an example. If there's a certain type of grass that wasn't native to the area.
A typical lawn grass, for instance.
Yes, ryegrass. Then they could require that that be removed. It could become a violation of the law if, you know, Shasta daisies were determined to be an invasive species in an area because some bird didn't like it. And all of us who have, you know, flowers in our front yard could be violating the ESA. An invasive species is something that the environmentalists have been working very, very hard to get passed in Congress. I believe there was a bill put forth that was a singular intent. It's been attempted to be placed in the highway bill. You know, this is part of their long-term agenda to get invasive species. And so expanding the ESA's authority beyond, you know, the plants and animals are used to into invasive species with a huge expansion of the ESA, and this was something that Pombo was pushing. Now, there have been a lot of reports out that, oh, he didn't really intend for that bill to go forward, that it, you know, was a red herring, that he was going to do the right thing all along, and that one thing that I think is important to note, because I don't find that to be true at all, is his bill had already, the first bill had already been put through legislative council, which is usually the last step they take before they file it. Another thing is that when the handful of people were able to view the bill that he ended up dropping, the H.R. 3824, just less than 24 hours before it was filed, they had informed us, some of us were on a conference call with the staff, and then there were a couple people that were in the room, and they informed us that invasive species have been taken out of that bill. And R.J. Smith in D.C. Noted that there were still places in that draft where invasive species, the language was showing up, because I think it was in Palmer's original bill, I think 17 different times by my count. And so that Palmer had this new bill stashed away and just, you know, was going to file it at the appropriate time, I don't think is in a correct analysis. I think that maybe a couple weeks prior to the actual filing of this bill, they actually started getting serious about making some significant changes. And they had to in order to get their bill filed. And I think what is really important for landowners to understand is that the tone of the debate after the bill was filed was property rights driven. Now, I think there's really good reason to argue whether or not this bill protects property rights, and I would say it doesn't.
The whole idea, it strikes many people as being antithetical to property rights. I mean, we've had a drive in this country for many decades now that has just squeezed our timber owners, our ranchers, and our farmers. Many of them either right out of business or right to the brink of being out of business, and it's very disheartening. For many people to see the concept, the premise of the Endangered Species Act is that plants and animals under the control of the federal government are more important than the conduct of a person's life or the ideals behind private property. With for those of us who understand what private property is, we know that the ecology and the prospects for a healthy landscape are existent only in a regime of private property and not with centralized government control.
You're absolutely right, and I'm not one of those that sees the environmental movement as a group of do-gooders. I think the intent of the Endangered Species Act was not to recover species, but was to extinguish private property, and that's the only thing that you can say that act has actually accomplished. And so, you know, that's a real hurdle. I think that's a real problem. You can't amend a bad bill. And so it is, but I think from a political perspective, I think it's important for landowners to realize that our message changed the debate. And, you know, the floor debate that surrounded the passage of H.R. 3824 was focused on private property. Now, whether or not the language actually accomplished that was another story, but I don't ever remember seeing, you know, congressmen stand up on the floor and defend private property like they did. I mean, that to me was amazing. Now, we have a long ways to go, but I do think it's really important to note that landowners have had a significant voice in this debate, and I think it's important that continue.
Well, it certainly is, and certainly the call is out across the country that your house, your business are not safe, and landowners in rural areas have known that their lands have not been safe for a long time, and now it's everyone in America is beginning to feel that pressure, and so a turn is maybe ready to happen, but we can't let up the pressure because the dollars and the legislation and the political power behind the grab for political property and for private property is greater than it's ever been in the history of the world, and it's going to take the average American standing up, working with others in their communities working with other communities to bring about a great change in this country so that the freedoms that we've been granted can be passed to our children. We'll be right back in 2021. We're back here at Freedom 21 Santa Cruz Radio Show. While some stations take a commercial break, we're going to continue with our conversation with Margaret Byfield and Julie Smithson. Julie, tell us, give us an example or two of the kinds of pain that the Endangered Species Act has brought about for people living in the lands of America.
Well, in my own community back in early 1999, it's a farming community comprised of a lot of Amish and Mennonite farmers, and there was a meeting held at a local Mennonite Bible college in the sanctuary. The meeting was hosted by U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. Until that meeting, I had no idea of the depth of a plan when a community comes under the crosshairs of a federal agency. We were handed relocation brochures at the door for us, and we were told that we would have to move because they discovered that we had possible habitat for the Indiana bat. I felt as though, for the first time in my life, I didn't understand English. I didn't understand, and no one else in that room except for the federal agency representatives understood what was being said there. And of course, that's quite a gutting moment to realize that everything that you hold dear is all of a sudden on the line. And that was what started me on this journey. Well, I've met many regulatory victims, and when I say regulatory, I'm just referring to the Endangered Species Act, but there's many others. These are people that have not been poor stewards. They've been really good stewards. They've taken good care of their land, their resources, plants, animals, wildlife, domestic life, just across the board, they have done nothing wrong. And this is one of the hard things to understand, is how an act can take people who are doing nothing wrong and remove them from everything they hold dear. And oftentimes, it's many generations of the same family, many generations of a community. It turns once thriving areas into ghost towns. And we've watched as the West burns millions of acres each year, and most of the acreage that is directly affected by these fires is mismanaged or non-managed. It's not private property. It's federally owned land that has been allowed to just sit there and build up a fuel load of dead brush or dead underbrush. I'm reminded often of the blowdown from 1995 that's in the Boundary Canoe National Wilderness along our U.S.-Canadian border in northern Minnesota. There are thousands and thousands of acres of full-grown trees that were blown down in a windstorm. Now, under private property rights, people would have gone in there and cleaned that up. Now, we have a tinderbox just waiting to burn, and they won't put it out because there's no way to get into it. These are major trees that have been blown down, and they're 10 or 20 feet off the ground. It's just an impenetrable maze. And that's federally owned land. I don't think I know of anyone that would have done that with privately owned land.
No, you have an interest in the future with private property. You have an interest in the next election if it's government-managed property. So, that's a good example, and certainly the experience that you had in Ohio has been replicated all over the country, from Klamath to right here in Santa Cruz. We've got a forest that is ready to burn. We're about ready to welcome back our audience here at Freedom 21. Welcome back to the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz Radio Show. I'm Michael Shaw with our guests, Margaret Byfield of Stewards of the Range and Julie Smithson of PropertyRightsResearch.org. Margaret, tell us, before we get back to discussion on the Endangered Species Act, tell us a little bit about Stewards of the Range. Of course, we talk here at Freedom 21 Santa Cruz regularly about the Wildlands Project, and we have Michael Kaufman is a regular guest on our show. Tell us about Taking Liberty and other activities at Stewards of the Range.
Well, Taking Liberty is a really important educational program that we were very fortunate to be a part of, and thank Michael for his help on that, for sure. But we are, Stewards is a property rights organization. I think you've probably also interviewed my dad along the way, Wayne Hage. We got our start supporting the Hage versus United States takings case. And it, you know, when that case was first filed, it was a pretty aggressive challenge. And there really was a need to gather support for it, and that really was the catalyst for Stewards of the Range. And since then we've gone on and have taken on other cases and have developed a number of things where we can help other landowners. Our focus really is to educate landowners to be better tooled, better prepared for these battles, so that if it does land on their doorstep, they know where to go and what they need to do to fight it. So we have we do some pretty aggressive training. We do hold a number of conferences. We have one coming up in Reno October 28th, which is titled Property Rights After Kilo. And that's going to be an important session because I think we have four attorneys coming in that are in the middle of these issues. They're in the courtroom fighting these issues. And Michael Kaufman will be there. He's going to open the program. I think it's really important that we set the stage. The Taking Liberty program is a great kind of explanation of where we are in the battle. The Wildlands Project shows us where the environmentalists want to take us. Taking Liberty shows us how far they have come. And it's a visual presentation on the web, and it'll show region by region how much land they have locked up, what programs are ongoing, and what they plan to lock up through these different programs. And as I'm sure you've looked at it pretty close, it's kind of eerie how the pattern of what they're locking up follows right along the lines of the Wildlands Project.
Well, you know, Michael put out a map 10 years ago from documents that he obtained in Geneva, and it is amazing how what has been locked up through Endangered Species Act protections and through conservation easements and through direct acquisitions of by NGOs or by government itself, how that map is being formulated. And if you're not familiar with it, you can go to Stewards of the Range and look at this online. You can buy the DVDs at both Stewards of the Range and at freedom21santacruz.net. And it is a very valuable tool if you're at all focused on the defense of private property, or if you're a rural landowner, you need to know what the plan is so that you can recognize it when it comes into your community. And it's in your community because it's in every community across the country. There are sustainable development programs that are designed to help implement this map. And when the map is finalized and when the final hammer is brought down, America, not just for the rural residents, but for the urban residents, will not be the America that we think we live in. It will be totally different. We'll be confined to narrow settlement zones, and we'll be restricted in our mobility, and the great lands of America will be off limits to the American people. So it's critical that you understand what the Wildlands Project is all about, and there's no quicker, faster, and sharper way of learning about it than understanding the Wildlands Project and looking at the DVD video called Taking Liberty, produced by Stewards of the Range and Dr. Michael Kaufman, is just the perfect methodology for coming to understand that. I'm going to be there at the Reno Conference, and I look forward to meeting you there, Margaret. And
I look forward to it, too.
It ought to be a great conference. Now, we have a caller, Tim from Texas. Oh, we've lost Tim from Texas. Well, Tim, call us back, and we'll get you back on the line here. Julie?
Yes.
What do you see happening as a result of this reauthorization? Do you see it lessening the condition, the adverse condition for landowners and the concept of private property, or do you see it accelerating it?
Well, let's do this as an if it's reauthorized, because we still have the option of repeal.
And that's the option that that makes the most sense to many people in the freedom movement.
You might be wondering if Freedom 21 Santa Cruz is a liberal or a conservative organization.
Are they left or right? Republican or Democrat? But you'll find that none of these one-dimensional labels applies to Freedom 21 Santa Cruz, nor to many of its participants. Freedom 21 Santa Cruz dialogue doesn't take place in a left-right, liberal-conservative dialectic, but on a spectrum between liberty and tyranny. Freedom 21 Santa Cruz participants include people from all political parties, religions, races, and backgrounds who are united in the pursuit of individual liberty and the protection of our U.S. Constitutional Republic.
To find out how you can donate to or participate in Freedom 21 Santa Cruz, please log on to freedom21santacruz.net or call 831-684-2232.
Welcome back to the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz Radio Show. Julie, before our commercial break came up, you mentioned the word repeal. Now, that's something that citizens have been afraid to say for many years about the Endangered Species Act. But repeal does solve these problems. I mean, it doesn't mean that we can't pass a law that says nobody's to shoot or kill a bald eagle or some other valued creature that is short in numbers. But the idea behind the Endangered Species Act, really born out of the international treaties, is not about protecting species. As Margaret said, it's a lot more about the taking of private property. So, what are your thoughts about repeal, and how is it that practically that can come about here over the next period of time?
I think through education of a lot more people and elected officials as to the perks, if you will, of repeal. The fact that we have already come 32 years since the original Endangered Species Act, and actually there was another 5 or 6 years before that where there were other versions of the act in place, that we can do right by species without this legislation. One thing that kind of troubles me is that the definitions within the Act as it stands right now give the Secretary even more powers than she already has. And Gail Norton is not an elected official. She's an appointed official. as was Bruce Babbitt and other people that were secretaries of the Department of Interior.
And their job is to get more land for the federal government. Certainly, Gail Norton advertises a libertarian is no friend of the rancher, farmer, or timber landowner.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the things that's in the bill as it stands right now under Section 4 is the determination of endangered species and threatened species. And it refers to the fact that the secretary will now have the power to determine whether any species is an endangered or threatened species because of the following factors. And this is important. The present or threatened destruction, modification, or curtailment of its habitat or range by human activities, competition from other species, drought, fire, or other catastrophic natural causes. I believe that at any point in time, the secretary could determine that one of those things is occurring anywhere in the country.
Well, droughts happen, and droughts are natural, and if a species can't endure a natural drought, to use that as the excuse to take people off the landscape and confiscate their land is an abominable idea.
And that's the first of five things in that determination.
And that's within the new reauthorized endangered species.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Now, my website at propertyrightsresearch.org, there are buttons for different things that are of importance to your listener. One of them is there is an Endangered Species Act button. There's another button for legislation. There is another button that's very extensive on the Wildlands Project. So if someone wants to just bone up on different parts of the property rights issues, they can do that. There's over 14,000 pages there that I've researched very carefully, and as you said, there's an amazing amount of information there. And it's done so that no one else will have to go through what we did. But one thing that was wonderful about our experience was it taught us about networking. And after 3.5 years, we watched U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service officially close its proposal to turn us into a federal wildlife refuge. We have our Amish and Mennonite farmers out here. We have wonderful neighbors, and we do not have a federal wildlife refuge. And strangely enough, we still have possible habitat for the Indiana bat.
Well, you know, that just shows people around the country that by organizing, by building off the successes that are out there, we talk about successes on this show regularly. There are plenty of successes. Your community can be a success, too. You just need to follow some of the examples, be creative yourself, and work with your neighbors, work with other communities, and we can beat this beast back. And for those communities that have not yet circulated the Sustainable Development Guide prepared and produced by Freedom 21 Santa Cruz, let me suggest you go to our website, freedom21santacruz.net, and look at our electronic version, and do like so many communities have done, order these things in bulk, so that you can distribute it to your neighbors and associates and to your political officials. It's called Understanding Sustainable Development, Agenda 21, a guide for public officials. And in it, you'll learn what sustainable development is, how it's being implemented, and what you can do. And I certainly do recommend to the listeners who want to understand what's going on and become involved and protect your own lives and property and the lives of your children's and our posterities generally to go into Julie Smithson's website propertyrightsresearch.org and there's a wealth of information, and you'll be all the better for doing it. And I want to thank you so much, Julie, for all the work you've done for so many years and for being with us tonight and sharing some of those experiences.
Thank you, Michael, and thank you for all the things that you do, because you work as hard as any of the rest of us, and you're owed a great debt for that.
Well, the movement is rising, and I think what Margaret is telling us, that people in Congress, maybe for the first time, impartially from the repercussions of the Kelo case, are beginning to take notice that Americans do care about private property, and that we can't be fooled forever about the protection of a red-legged frog or a long-toed salamander or a fly or all the other things that are being served by the Endangered Species Act, while the American experience gets burned right down to the crisp of a burnt out forest. American people aren't going to be happy with that result, and I think more and more people are taking the precautionary tale of fighting against it, so that isn't our fate. When the American experience resurrects, it will be grand indeed, because so many tools are available to us today that weren't available to our ancestors. And if we reincorporate those ideals of freedom, we'll march to great heights. We have Tim on the line from Texas. Hello, Tim.
Hello.
Have you got a comment or a question for our guest tonight?
Is Margaret there?
Yes, she is.
Margaret, you're in Taylor?
Yes, I am.
Are you part of Michael McCall's new district?
No. We're Carter.
The new congressman, I kind of figured he would have been in your district. He's around the Austin area. I got changed from Ron Paul's district to Michael McCall's district, and I got the opportunity to speak about Agenda 21 for about 5 minutes at a Texas Farm Bureau convention last year. And Michael, you'll be proud to know that I stuck one of these guides for public officials right under his nose. I thought I was going to have to chase him down to give it to him after I got through speaking about Agenda 21 in front of the farmers. They don't seem to understand that their own government will steal their property. It's going on at a massive rate. I'm in Red Rock, Margaret, so I'm just right down the street from you. A friend emailed me this about this broadcast tonight is the only reason I know about it. I'm affiliated with another broadcast called American Exposé, and it is Chris Gerner's AmericanExposé.com, and that's American spelled with a K, not a C, AmericanExposé.com, and it has mountains of information about Agenda 21 and just all kinds of good stuff.
Chris Gerner does have a very good site, and he has a good radio show. I know he had interviewed Gary Robinson, our guest from last week, and he's got a good radio show as well. The word about Agenda 21, sustainable development, is spreading, and when it catches that critical mass, congressmen are going to run for cover, hoping and pretending
they
can cover up.
Yeah, Michael McCall's already running for cover because he was running for me because I had to literally chase him down to give him this because I was handing them out at the door as the farmers were leaving. I passed out about 150 of them that night.
Well, good for you. I know we've had a lot of response for the guide from Texas, and I was on the Power Hour yesterday morning with Dave Van Kleist, and had callers from around the country saying they're using this guide and how wonderful and helpful it has been in their own communities for fighting off these kinds of dynamics.
I went to a print shop and printed up 150 of them and gave just almost every one of them out that night, Michael. So.
Go to a print shop, but we can send these in bulk at a pretty reasonable price, less than what you can do.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm going to go to the hospital. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.